Past players, past legends, past legends.
Go through all the roles, the various roles.
Yeah, just you've held almost even, every role, haven't you?
And even just the slight differences, Harps. Go through that side of things.
Yeah, well, some people they say I get sacked from each one of the roles, but no, not really. I started in player welfare, player development. I did that for 3 or 4 years, and that was primarily looking after the players off the field. But it merged in pretty soon after I got there with also doing some recruiting with James Fantasia and our recruiting network back in, I suppose that was 98, 99, 2000 and 2001. What happened in 2001 was Bill Sanders retired. Stephen Trigg got the job as the CEO. And Stephen came to me and said, I want you to be the membership and communications manager. And I said, mate, I can't do that. Like, I don't even know what a gold membership is. And he said, oh, no, you'll be all right. Just read the book and you'll work it out. He said, you're good with people. You'll be fine. So anyway, I did that for a while and loved it. Did the membership and communications, which was dealing with the media. And, gee, that's come a long way. I remember myself and Matt Robram, he was my sidekick in there. And we used to get on the website of the Crows back then and answer the blogs, sit there and answer blogs with people. And it's come a long way since then. So we did that. I went from there it sort of expanded into a commercial operations role. So in charge of everything that was incoming. So it was not only membership, it was merchandise, sponsorship and all those sort of things. And we did that for just over 10 years.
Yeah, you did that for a while, a long time.
Yeah. And then went back into the footy operations role. I'm not sure when that was, about 2012. And then that merged into doing the footy administration, the logistics with the team, and the women's team came in. So I got in charge of putting the women's team together and doing the logistics for the men, like the travel and all that sort of stuff. And then the last 3 years, the women's head of women's football's continued on. But the last 3 years, I've gone back into the recruiting. So back to where it all started for me. So that's where I see you out at. I go out and watch under 18 game, Norwood and all over the shop. And so really at the moment, I've loved the women's program since I've been in it, which is now about to go into its 10th season. And I always love the recruiting. So, I'm in a very happy place in that I love my role at the footy club.
How long did you know before the women's comp was actually going to get up and running?
And also how Adelaide managed to get a license and get in, I think is fascinating. Inform people about that, because I didn't know that full story into researching with you today, Arps.
No, first of all, how long did we know? It was probably maybe 12 months out that we ascertained that, look, there's going to be this women's competition and it's going to be a goer. So that was fine. And then the next part was, how do we get a license? Our board looked at it and they said, no, we need to be in this. And so we sort of did our work with the AFL people, but they basically said, look, South Australia's women's football's pretty weak there, so you're not going to get a license. So we went back away. Dave Noble was in charge of the footy department then, and we spoke about it and we said, well, how can we do this? And we said, well, why don't we see if we can gather in the Northern Territory? AFL are trying to develop the game in the Northern Territory, and if we said we'd do it together with the Northern Territory, they might let us in. So that's what happened. We spoke to the Northern Territory people. Michael Solomon was the CEO up there. Wally Gallio was running some of the programs. And we did a joint submission to get a team that would be based in Adelaide, however, run out of both Darwin in the Northern Territory and down here in Adelaide. And I think in that first squad we had, I think the squad was about 27, and there were sort of 9 who were training up in the Territory.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And 18 who were training down here, including, Aaron Phillips from Dallas, Texas. And
yeah.
Jenna McCormack, who'd been playing soccer in Ireland, Talia Radan, who was from Adelaide but was now in Canberra.
Yep.
So we sort of gathered a group of misfits, but probably our biggest weakness, as in how in the hell are we going to put together a team that's sort of a third of them are training in Darwin and two-thirds of them are training in Adelaide and make them a team and make them cohesive, which we thought would be our biggest weakness, but it ended up being our biggest strength because they were that determined to get on and celebrate with each other and talk to each other all the time. And they became so close-knit that, you know, even before that first grand final in 2017, I remember thinking, God, it's going to take a fair team to beat us. But in the meantime, you know, when we first started, I remember Josh Vandal, who ran the...
Yes, yes.
He ran the women's football at the AFL. And after we trained for a while and we got Aaron in, and I thought, wow, Aaron's pretty good. And then Noves got... He went up to... what was it called? Mount Newman in Western Australia and got this girl called Chelsea Randall to play for us. And I watched her train and I thought, oh, we're not too bad. So in one of the conversations with Josh, I said, oh, mate, I watched us train. There's a couple of young ones, Baranoff and Hatchard, and Sarah Allen, all right. And then Randall's really good and Aaron's really, really good. I reckon we might be all right. And he said, no way, mate. He said, you'll be the worst team in it.
You beauty. Geez, am I looking forward to giving Vand a shit about that too, mate?
Yes. He said, you'll be the worst thing. And then I sort of was set back a bit and thought, oh, okay. And then he said, oh, sorry, no. You'll be the second worst team in it. I said, oh, good, okay. Who's going to be the worst? And he said, oh, you'll be just behind or just in front of GWS. And I said, good. Can we play GWS in the first game? Because at least if that happens, you know, then we're playing away. And then they'll at least come again to the next game and, you know, we'll be all right and people will come again. So, anyway, we ended up winning the whole bloody thing. I remember after round two, Aaron said, we can win the whole thing. And I sort of chuckled to myself inside thinking, look, I know more than you because I've spoken to Josh Vandaloo and we're not really good. But anyway, Aaron was right and Josh and I were wrong.
Now, did I hear or see that... one of those games was at Theberton and you anticipated a smallish crowd and that wasn't the case?
Yeah, well, so first the game. First game was at Theberton. There I spoke go. To John Kernahan from the Adelaide Footy League and I said, can we play at Theberton? He goes, yep, that'd be good. He said, what sort of a crowd do you think you're getting? I said, oh, look, there's a bit of interest, so I reckon we might get like 3,000. And he said, oh, okay. And I said, why don't we get, you know, like the clubs that have made this possible, Salisbury North and Morphettville Park and that, why don't we get them to run the canteens and so they get some money back out of it and you run the alcohol booze and we'll have a good day. And he goes, yep. He said, I'll tell them we'll get a crowd of about 3,000 and we'll go from there. Anyway, it was a couple of days before and there was a bit more interest. And I rang him up and I said, Kerners, look, I think we might get, I reckon we might get like 5,000. He said, oh, crikey, it's okay, mate. Look, I'll ring all the people and tell them to get a bit more food and drinks.
Yep.
Anyway, and I think the game was due to, we were playing an early game on Sunday. It was 11 o'clock or some ridiculous hour. And I got there early and the gates weren't going to open until 9:30 for the 11 o'clock start. And I got there and there was already a queue up outside the gate. It went back a few hundred metres. Anyway, about 20 minutes later, I got this phone call from a police sergeant who said, look, you need to open the gates here, mate. And I said, well, we're not opening until 9:30. He said, no. He said, traffic is banked back out the thing, down South Road. You're holding up the whole of South Road. We've got to open the gates so we can get people in. So I cut a long story short. We opened the gates. We got the people in. We got just under 10,000, 9,800. Food and drink was run out before halftime.
Yeah.
But we won and everyone came back again the next game, which was great.
Yeah.
And AFLW was up and running in Adelaide, which was a lot of hard work because the AFL said we didn't have the talent and all that and we ended up making it work and it's still going strong today, 10 years later.
How important was Erin in terms of training standards? She's an elite athlete. She'd also know new football. Like her and Sarah Allen have got footy smarts.
They grew up with it,
the whole box and dice. But how important was Erin just setting the standards with everything?
Well, Erin was she had played at the highest possible level in basketball, but she realised to be good, you got to train really hard. And so she was able to instill those, instill that into the players. And yeah, that was another thing that was, yeah, we fell on our feet there because we had the dual captains. We had Aaron who would set those, you know, make them train hard. And then we had Chelsea, if, and anyone that's met Chelsea around is one of the best people I've ever met in my life. And it was good for me because I'd never been involved in women's footy. So like in men's footy, if something was going wrong, I'd either tell someone off. But I thought, I can't tell these girls off because I don't know what will happen. So if I needed someone to tell someone off, I got Aaron to do it. And then if, like in men's footy, if things were going bad and someone was having a bad day, I'd put my arm around them and say, come on, mate. And then I thought, well, I can't do that with the girls either. So I'll get Chelsea to do that. So I had my good cop, bad cop people. And if I needed someone to get a rev, Aaron did it. And if I needed someone to give someone a cuddle, Chelsea did it. And it worked out perfectly.
Is that where Matty Clark sort of comes in? He seems that placid sort of guy that, you know, he puts his arm around when he needs to, but also he reads the riot act as such, but he, you know, he sort of says, hey, this is the way we're going to do it. And it's a very teachable moment.
Well, I think, Matt came in after 2 years in it.
Yeah, let's give Beck Goddard her praise to start with.
In the first 2 years. And she did a great job in bringing the group together. Then they were ready for, you know, some of an expert as in a game plan and how we're going to do this and how we structure up. And Matthew was perfect for that. But the other thing he was perfect for was that some of these girls get wound up and all worried about stuff that they shouldn't get worried about. Matthew doesn't get worried about anything, even stuff he should get worried about.
Yeah.
So between them, it was a great, you know, Matthew calmed them down and they got him more excited. So it's a very good match. Our women's team and Matthew Clark is a perfect match, I'd say.
Okay, the next bit, and I have spoken to you, you know, privately about this, but more the next bit. As I've mentioned there, you know, with Aaron and Chelsea and Sarah Allen having the footy smarts, for more, and we've developed defensive structures, but the next bit is just trying to teach players, and I admit, Ebony is my number one hit on this, to call for the ball at the right time, to run off at the right time, to create a space.
Rather than see ball, get ball.
Yeah, and not create that pack.
Yep.
As well, and you and I have spoken about how the umpiring's got to pay more free kicks and that side of things. But for mine, that's the next step in women's footy. And we all learn far better as a kid than you do as an adult. So it's hard still teaching that sort of thing to an adult. And Ebony's just a ball hungry person. But I've got to be honest, if I was doing the review of her match review with her, I'd be pretty hard on her. That's a personal bit. There, and obviously, you know, I sit on the scoreboard and I'm there, and it is a very good spot to notice things like that because you are so close at Nord and just things like that.
Do you think that she's improved since 2017, though?
Oh, of course she has. Yes, there's no doubt about that, but it's still the next step. She still goes too early on ball ups at times when she is the hit two player. She's got better at that, but it's still an area. But it's just still the area where she calls for the ball.
I'd 100% agree with you there. If you're just talking about Ebony, mate, she's one of the best people I've ever seen.
Yeah.
To give 100%.
It's not. I'm not questioning her as a person. You know, her effort and all that is incredible.
And her ability is amazing.
Yeah, to get a quick kick away and all that. But for me, that's the next evolution of Ebony Marinoff to become
a
better player again.
No, and I agree with that. Like she's always had that 100% effort 100% of the time, but you know her disposal used to be, I don't know, 2 out of 10.
Yeah,
it's improved. It's probably 6 out of 10.
Yeah,
it can still improve more, but yeah, I've never seen anyone work so hard to get down and try and get better and better all the time. And she gets that feedback from you know her midfield coach and Courtney Cramie. And I suppose, you know, in the end, this whole game is evolving. You know, the men's league's been around for 200 years or whatever. The women's league's been around for 10 years, and they're getting better. And you know, I'd still say now, like the team that we won it in that first year, when they said we couldn't win it, and if I had that team now, and I played them against our team from this year, who we ran third, which is fair. Our team now would absolutely slaughter that team for 2017. Exactly. It's come that far, the whole competition.
Even and though really, probably that 17 team, you can argue, especially with a young Chelsea and an Aaron Phillips in it, may well have had more actual natural ability, but the teams are batting deeper now than, and we're gradually getting there in that way as well. Even though there probably wasn't enough talent for 18 yet, but we're getting there.
No, the talent didn't bat that deep, and really there was probably not a great, you know, our game plan in those first couple of years. Let's get the ball and kick it.
Just kick it,
as far as we can, and then try and get it again and kick it as far as we can, and then try and get it again and kick it as far as we can, sort of thing. So, that's pretty crude. It's probably a little bit better than that, but we've come a long way, and really, you know, in those first few years, you know, to me, if you were the best kicking and best ground ball team, you probably win the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whereas now there's a little bit more science, and there's a little bit more science to it, which is great, and it's come a long way, and you know, I'm proud that I played a small part in where it's come from and where it is now.
I'll remove the small word there, Harps. Yes.
Mind you,
the game against Carlton, that final in terms of also not only the fact there was 50,000 people there, but the standard, I think that's still the best Crows have played that day.
Yeah, well, we had a couple of young guns in Daniel Ponter and Eloise Jones who really just came to the fore all at the same time. We still had Erin going at her best. We had Chelsea Randall and Sarah Allen and Anne Hatchard had just came, you know, they were now 22, 23 and were just exploding. So it all fell pretty well for us. We were certainly by far the best side in 2019. But, you know, if you'd said to me, even if you'd said it now, that we'll get 53,000 people at a game, a women's game of footy, what an unbelievable
achievement
that is in itself. And I still remember, I was just sitting in the coach's box before the game started and sort of nudged Narelle Smith, who was sitting beside me, and said, "Have a look at that. They've had to open up the second level." And then just as the game was about to start, I nudged her again and said, "They've just opened up the top level," and it just kept filling and filling up and filling up. And to get 53,000 people there, what a great thing for women's footy. What a great thing for South Australia. And yeah, it was probably one of my proudest days at the Adelaide Footy Club. That, I'm part of this, and 53,000 people have come to watch and play. How good's that?
Do you think the competition grew just a little bit too quickly, or was it important that all 18 teams had a women's team from a club point of view?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It did grow quickly. Was there enough talent to go around? Possibly not. But you know, I was on the competition committee then. And my philosophy was this, that I felt that my club, and I wasn't talking about, I was talking about for the good of the game because I was on a competition committee.
Yep.
I thought my club became a complete club when they got our women's team in. And so therefore, I didn't think any other club should be excluded from having a women's team and being a complete footy club.
Absolutely.
So that was my philosophy. So I was one that voted for, look, as soon as you think there's enough talent around, put them in, get them in. Now, if I was just talking about the Adelaide Footy Club, I would have preferred, keep Port out for as long as you bloody can.
Yep.
We're getting all the best players from South Australia.
Yes.
And we'll continue to be good. But really, what is best for footy in general is that every club deserves a women's team at that level. And now there's 18 in there and they're getting stronger. You saw Port get stronger this year. You saw Hawthorne rise up the ladder from 15th to third or fourth or whatever, the second in the end of the minor round. So that would suggest there's enough talent. And if I look at this year's draft that's about to come up next Monday, you know, there's probably 20 players in there that, you know, I think we could pick and they would help make our team a better team next year straight away. And there's a few other speculative players, whereas in those first years there was maybe one or two from each state and then it sort of died away a fair bit. But the ones coming through now, you know, they were whatever, 9, 10, 11-year-old girls when this competition first started in 2016, 17. Now they're 18, 19, 20-year-old girls who've played through a whole pathway, who didn't have to, like, you know, Denny Van Hagen, who I coached in Auskick and at Happy Valley Primary School till she was in year six. Then she had to go away and play soccer for 7 or 8 years before she came back as a 17-year-old and started playing footy again in the women's competition in the Adelaide Footy League. So now there's a pathway for the next Denny Van Hagen to go through, or the next Chelsea Randall or whoever. So no, it's been a great thing. It's a great thing for the game. Now the competition's just dropped off, you know, recently in the numbers, but
yeah, that was going to be a question there. Yeah,
there was a bit of a, I suppose it was a bit of a novelty at the start. Then it dropped away slightly. Then COVID hit, and it was a real battle to just keep it going. It's picking up. We've got a core group of supporters who Malcolm, you'd see at Norwood every time we get 3,000 or 4,000 every game at Norwood. You know, I'd love to get that number up to 7,000 or 8,000, and you know, hopefully we might be able to do that in future years when we get to Theberton.
In that, Phil, though, can we go back? It was ironic where you're talking about the first game and said about involving the initial clubs like Salisbury North and Morfettville Park and that side of things. I'd like to go each game at, I still think Nord's the best venue in terms of getting people there, in terms of providing undercover and heat and rain, and you and I have spoken about that side of things. But in terms of, why not have a curtain raiser between those clubs and just, or even a half-time game and an area set aside. I reckon there's areas there now that it's the initial novelty's worn off, especially for Adelaide, it's still there with Port. I reckon we've got to do things like that to get the interest higher in numbers.
We have a couple of curtain raisers with our academies, and I suppose one, and I agree with you, you've got a captive audience there. If people are out there playing the game, get them to our games and get them involved. I suppose the problem, it's not a problem, but the problem at the moment is that, you know, their competition finishes well before ours even starts, sort of thing. Yeah, that shouldn't discount you. Why not have them out there? I think it's going to be a push from the AFL. There's a new person in charge of the AFL in Emma Moore, and she's very much of that opinion that there's a captive audience out there in the amateur footy league ranks.
We've got to utilise.
We're probably not tapping into as well as we could do. So obviously you must have spoken to Emma at some stage.
No, it's an idea I was pretty red hot on. I'd like to, but I've been red hot on.
I think you'd enjoy a conversation with her because she's 100% of the same opinion as you.
Oh, and you and I have spoken about it, and I'm still adamant that the worst thing women's footy did was change the seasons. In terms of, for mine, when women's footy, yes, I get it with the weather and we may have had to adjust and had more night games and that side of things, but we've all had a guts full of the 8,682 Big Bash games by then. And February, you actually got some, you know, and you could get some publicity and not get hidden in the men's comp. And I reckon it's bloody hard. You're playing.
Liking this podcast? Please like, rate, and subscribe.